This is Scott Becker with Becker's Healthcare. I've got the distinct privilege today to talk to Tim Atterbury. Tim is the CEO of the American College of Cardiology, which is one of the largest physician associations or medical associations in the country. Plus, through a recent acquisition, the CEO of MedAxiom. I'm going to talk to Tim about the American College, some of the big issues facing cardiologists, and more. Tim, can you take a moment and just briefly introduce yourself?
Sure. This is, again, as Scott said, I'm Tim Atterbury, CEO of ACC, American College of Cardiology, and MedAxiom, and I've recently joined the ACC. I've been the CEO since September 4th of 2018, been in healthcare for 33 years, most of those years within cardiovascular services, and most recently I was the CEO of a large tertiary care regional referral center in Northeast Tennessee in Kingsport, Tennessee.
Fantastic. And so tell us just a little bit about the size, the scope of the American College, and maybe the top goals of the American College of Cardiology.
Sure. So the American College of Cardiology started in 1949, primarily representing cardiologists, but over the years we have expanded as the cardiovascular services in the U.S. and worldwide have expanded to not only represent and support cardiologists, but also the entire cardiovascular team, and now the entire cardiovascular, all the organizations involved in the delivery of cardiovascular care. So we like to position ourselves as we're the professional home for anyone involved with the delivery of cardiovascular services, whether it be in the hospital, ambulatory setting, or within a large health system, or even a minister of health or a Department of Health that is looking at the efficacy and quality of cardiovascular care. Everybody who is connected to cardiovascular care in any way, we're wanting to be the professional home and support both quality improvement, cost reduction, efficiency, and better performance.
And so let me ask you a parochial question. In terms of ranking the American College versus the AMA versus the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, which I sort of think of as the big three of professional associations today, I mean, do you put American College way ahead of those two, or what are some of your thoughts?
Of course, I'm going to put the American College of Cardiology way ahead of those two. The American Academy of Orthopedic Surgery, very strong, robust, and I actually think very similar in their activities as the ACC. The ACC recently updated its strategic plan. So we, January 1, 2019, we've launched a new five-year strategic plan, four big goals, four big pillars. The four pillars are professional home, I talked about that already, actionable knowledge, care delivery is number three, and then organizational stability. And when you look at those four, they're really about how do we make the ACC more relevant to the organizations and people who deliver care? How do we provide better knowledge and innovations at the point of care? How do we improve the quality and outcomes and cost efficiency of the care that's delivered? And then fourthly, how do we make sure the ACC is here long-term? We want to celebrate our 75th birthday in 2023, so let's make sure the ACC is a strong organization. So I would put the ACC as one of the leading, if not the leading, medical organization because of our commitment to give robust solutions to our members and health systems in order to improve the quality and the efficiency of cardiovascular care.
Fantastic. I know that you've done a magnificent job in growing the American College. What's changed in cardiology over the last several years? What are the couple of the big changes in cardiology and in the greater professional community that you serve?
So the biggest change that's happened in the last 10 years in the U.S., and I'll touch on some international issues, but in the U.S. specifically, it's been the integration of cardiovascular specialists, cardiologists, cardiothoracic surgeons, vascular surgeons, into health systems. And so if you go back 10 years, the majority of cardiologists, cardiovascular specialists, were private practice. They owned their own practice. 10 years later, fast forward to 2019, 75% of cardiovascular specialists are employed by a health system or a hospital, and not just a regional health system. Some of these are really large, major national health systems. So we're seeing health systems get bigger, and cardiologists, 75% of them in the U.S. employed by those health systems. So we're seeing a significant integration of cardiovascular services into larger care delivery systems. If you look outside the U.S., one of the big pressures outside the U.S. is as nations get wealthier, as the individuals in that nation then prosper and live longer, we're seeing a rise in cardiovascular disease. So worldwide, with the exception of a handful of countries, of the almost 200 countries in the world, cardiovascular disease is all across the board the number one cause of death. And it's also the number one cost of healthcare services, consumer of healthcare services. There's a big spotlight on cardiovascular services, both from a quality standpoint to help people in that country live longer and live better, but also how do you sustain all the advances in cardiovascular care without bankrupting the nation?
Fantastic. Cardiology care, cardiovascular care, it's one of these issues. Unlike, for example, neurosurgical care might be high cost care, but it's not a high percentage that needs neurosurgical care. Where cardiology care, everybody needs it at some point. Is that a fair assessment?
That's a fair statement. If you live long enough, if some other cause of death doesn't keep you from developing symptomatic cardiovascular disease of some type, you live long enough, you will develop cardiovascular disease. So in the U.S., there are 120 million Americans with some form of cardiovascular disease, making it the single biggest disease state in the U.S. And worldwide, that's also developing. So you're right that one of the distinctions is, in many cases, orthopedics or oncology or neuroscience, there's an episode of care or an event, and you treat that event, and typically you move on to something else. In cardiovascular care, most of the conditions are chronic conditions, so once you're diagnosed with a form of cardiovascular disease, you have that form of cardiovascular disease until you die of that or of something else.
Tim, can you help me understand the three or four core areas of the American College? I understand a lot about it, but I don't understand that much. Tell me the three or four core areas.
All right. So we'll break it up into our kind of original core area was providing educational services, ongoing continuing education, and establishing clinical education guidelines for cardiovascular specialists. So that's still a big part of what we do, big part of our revenue stream, big part of our activities at the college is making sure that we curate, organize, and deliver, disseminate knowledge to equip the cardiovascular specialists. Number two are the registries. The registries are clinical outcomes registries looking at key cardiovascular procedural areas such as CAF, PCI, ICD implants, and other procedures that are done inside of the hospital, including our ambulatory registry called Pinnacle, which looks at how patients are managed outside the hospital. And the registries allow physicians and health systems and service line leaders to benchmark their performance across other hospitals participating in the registry. And again, the registry is a worldwide service, hospitals inside the U.S., hospitals outside the U.S. Another component of what we do are guidelines, guideline statements, consensus statements. We work with the American Heart Association on many of our clinical guidelines. These are statements that we make, formal documents that we publish that gives guidance to cardiovascular specialists and primary care physicians and other physicians on the proper management of cardiovascular patients with cardiovascular disease. As you mentioned, we also have the advocacy arm that represents cardiovascular specialists in D.C. And then we have a host of other activities and services all designed to equip hospitals and cardiovascular specialists with the most up-to-date knowledge and innovations to help them optimize their performance.
Thank you. So really, when you break it down, there's the core, which is education. You just had a huge meeting in New Orleans, 16,000-plus participants. There's the registries, which have become so important to benchmarking everything you do. There's advocacy, which I take it in today's healthcare climate, where more than 50-60% of pay comes from governmental organizations, whether Medicare, Medicaid, and otherwise, and just generally coding and everything else. Advocacy is so important. And then four, you put in sort of the buckets of a variety of other actions and activities. Thank you. What is I know that the American College has stayed sort of the true home of cardiovascular specialties and cardiologists. Some trade associations have had a negative impact over the last 15, 20 years as their basis moved away from them. In contrast, the American College's basis seemed to move closer to them. What do you attribute that success to, the success of the ACC2?
Well, I would attribute it to our willingness to change and develop new solutions. So an organization, the ACC, starts in 1949 by 13 cardiologists to make sure that those cardiologists and their colleagues around the U.S. had a professional home that would support them and advocate for them. That expanded over time. And that expanded over time because the market changed. Cardiology went from a specialty with limited tools and resources to a specialty with expansive tools and resources inside the hospital, outside the hospital, chronic, acute care, all the different aspects overlapping with all kinds of disease states, diabetes, overlapping with oncology, overlapping with pulmonary and critical care. So as the specialty has grown, the ACC has expanded its offerings, both clinical offerings and non-clinical offerings. And the non-clinical offerings include the decision we made recently to acquire MedAxiom, which has been a professional home for physicians and service line leaders around business and non-clinical issues, strategy, marketing, financial performance, operational performance. So now the ACC, with the acquisition of MedAxiom, can deliver both clinical innovation and knowledge as well as non-clinical offerings to support the CV enterprise in totality.
Thank you. So you'd attribute a lot of the success to really staying closely attuned and sort of evolving with the membership and the membership's needs is what it sounds like, really staying focused and being open to evolution while you stay critical to your core of education, advocacy, and obviously the registries became a huge part of what you do. Any thoughts, Tim? One of the hot issues right now in American healthcare discussion, and it's very complicated because already more than 50% plus of care, particularly in the cardiology area, is probably paid for by governmental payers, Medicare, Medicaid. And there's always the concern that Medicaid pays less than some of the commercial payers. But any thoughts in general from the Academy on Medicare for All or some of the political dynamics going on around Medicare for All, a public option? Does the ACC have a specific position on these things or not really?
The ACC's position is we think it is a great time for all the key stakeholders to have a thoughtful, nonpartisan, national dialogue about the way we're going to pay for, incentivize and pay for healthcare in this country. We have a fragmented system, as everybody knows. The Affordable Care Act did a lot to look at improving access, but it did very little, if anything, to reduce costs. That is the core problem with the American healthcare system today, is we have a very high-cost system. We have high quality, we have great access, but we also have very high cost, unsustainably high cost. So even though all the partisan rhetoric would lead people to kind of go to their corners, as anybody brings up Medicare for All or a public option or whatever the idea may be, I think at the core of it is everybody should agree on one thing. The current system is unsustainable. Medicare, according to the Medicare actuaries, will go broke sometime in 2026. When that happens, everybody who participates in Medicare, whether you're a beneficiary, a hospital, home health, cardiologist, et cetera, everybody's going to suffer. So we've got this big bullet coming at us. And if we don't act, we are going to be hit hard with a catastrophe of Medicare going bankrupt, which then means everybody takes across-the-board pay cuts. So I think it's very important to have a national dialogue, thoughtful, bipartisan, nonpartisan, use the facts. And I think by doing that, the ACC, because cardiovascular disease is such a big disease state, I think we will be a player to help design and develop and implement some new payment models that hopefully will get us on a road to sustainability.
Thank you. I think that's a great answer and as thoughtful an answer as you could have. And so you don't have, if you had Pelosi and Trump in the room together, do you have anything specifically you'd tell them?
I would tell them that we need to focus on interventions and changes that will create significant incentives for the marketplace of providers and health systems to deliver high quality care in the most cost-effective way possible. Currently, the incentives under fee for service, don't do that. Even with the value-based arrangements that have been adopted over the last 10 years, they're still working the edges. I think we need a overhaul. I think generally everybody involved with the ACC advocacy efforts, we all accept that we need something more significant, more comprehensive. Otherwise, what we have is too little of change through the reimbursement mechanism. So I think the advice to Ms. Pelosi and President Trump would be, let's come up with something more comprehensive, just like we did when we implemented DRGs back in 82 and 86. It was comprehensive, and it resulted in significant changes in the efficiency of care.
Thank you very much. Tim, it's amazing for me to sort of understand the breadth of the ACC today and what you do and what you all do and where the core is and how you've evolved. I want to thank you so much for joining our podcast today. We'll end up publishing this next week at Becker's Healthcare. Just a pleasure visiting with you. Thank you so much.
You're quite welcome. Thank you for the opportunity.